WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
An exhibit at Harvard of Piet Mondrian's transatlantic paintings got our classical music critic Lloyd Schwartz thinking about the relationship between abstraction and emotion. Lloyd's been wondering how paintings, which seem so cool, have so much power over him.
The history of art, from the time of the cave paintings, is a history of the intersection between reality and abstraction. Any work of art, even a great photograph, is both less than a complete photograph and more. There's always some element of abstraction, design, structure, repetition. The Dutch painter Piet Mondrian began as a painter of realistic images. But his paintings of grids, simple black lines against a white background filled in with blocks of red, yellow, and blue, are the primary example of the most austere qualities of abstract painting. They have no intrinsic or explicit emotional content. Yet like a Cézanne painting of apples or a Mozart string quartet, they're not only beautiful, but extraordinarily poignant, filled with mysterious implications, unsettling tensions, and dramatic juxtapositions. Of course, I can imagine real objects, Dutch interiors, mazes of rooms and corridors, or Manhattan streets with flashing lights, as in his famous painting, Broadway Boogie Woogie. Mondrian loved boogie woogie piano and often played jazz records while he painted. And skyscrapers under construction, little elevators speckling the precarious open air girders. I've been thinking about these issues since I saw the small but thrilling show of Mondrian's transatlantic paintings at Harvard's Busch Reisinger Museum. Mondrian had been living in Paris, but before the Nazi invasion, he moved to London, then to New York, where he arrived in 1940 at the age of 70 with a bunch of paintings he regarded as finished. But for his first New York show, he decided to repaint these canvases. He changed the relationship between the black lines in his grids, moved them closer together or further apart, wiped some out, added others. Even more surprising, he placed right next to one another, as he rarely did in his earlier work, areas of different colors, especially around the edges of the canvases, without boxing them inside the black lines. Narrow red rectangles now bump up against narrow yellow rectangles. Little red, yellow, or blue squares dot the perimeters. On a ghostly, unfinished canvas, you can see lines being rubbed out, areas of color in the process of being altered. These small patches of color are like eyes winking. They add a kind of festivity and charm that's rare in Mondrian. Each of these paintings is signed with a tiny PM in red paint at the bottom of one of the black stripes. Two dates of composition, 5 or 6 years apart, also in red, appear over another black line. One part of this exhibit includes interactive computer programs that allow you, through X-rays, ultraviolet light, infrared images, and microscopic observation, to trace the various stages of these paintings. One started out as mostly the black and white framework, with four small yellow squares near the bottom right. These became four blue squares. Mondrian added more lines and moved others, some only slightly. In the final version, there's only one small blue square, the one human touch in the anonymous structure, the open eye looking out at the world, at you. It's surprising to see these Mondrians in person. In reproduction, the surfaces are slick, perfect. In real life, you can see the vivid brushstrokes. Many of the canvases are cracked and fragile, which only heightens your sense of the precariousness of these images. Far from the cool, detached artist, the artist of rational balance, Mondrian turns out really to have been the artist of exploration, of experiment, of the obsessive, maybe even desperate attempt to find balance and harmony. The pure geometry, like musical notes or form and meter in poetry, keeps the artist literally from going to pieces. And each new painting is an admission that the search for that perfect harmony isn't over, can never be over. Some of these late paintings also show a new spirit of, what is it, almost frivolity. Is it the joy of creation in the face of impending catastrophe? All things fall and are built again, Yeats wrote in 1938 in his poem Lapis Lazuli. And those that build them again are gay. This joy doesn't deny the underlying tragic nature of human life. It's a kind of heroism. Yeats died the following year. In 1939, Mondrian still believed these paintings were finished. But he escaped the war with a new life at 70, in a new country, in a city that excited him. Gaiety, Yeats says earlier in that same poem, which not only shows us what art can do in the shadow of worldwide political crisis, but the heroism each of us is capable of in the face of our own inevitable mortality. Gaiety transfiguring all that dread.
Lloyd Schwartz is classical music editor of the Boston Phoenix. His latest book of poems is Cairo Traffic. He reviewed an exhibit of Piet Mondrian's transatlantic paintings, which opens at the Dallas Museum of Art on Sunday.